Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Martinelli, pronouns he, him, and I'm an editor at the Punished Backlog. In this episode, we're going to cover nostalgia in games, but not for the games that we think are classics, rather for the ones that we know don't quite deserve that praise, but we still love them anyway. We still got a level of appreciation for them. We got a great crew of panelists over here. How we all go around, say our names, pronouns, and normally we have one question for everyone to answer, but I got two today. They're both Halloween themed. By the time you hear this podcast, Halloween will have already happened, so just remember to listen to this again next year
on Halloween. Perfect timing, yeah.
I will hold you to it. I will find you and I will hold you to it. names, pronouns, tell us your favorite Halloween candy and your favorite Halloween-ish game. It doesn't have to be horror, just like it could be a spooky, not scary situation. So I'll go first. My favorite Halloween candy, as always, is Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Ooh.
I eat peanut butter basically every day. It's one of my favorite things. So in candy form, you can't lose. And Halloween-ish game, I have not played the first one. I'll play it later this week. But the Luigi's Mansion series.
You haven't played the first Luigi's Mansion?
Never played the first one. Played the other two. Luigi's Mansion 3 on Switch is particularly good. But yeah, it's my favorite kind of like Halloween themed, but not actually meant to be scary. Just kind of a silly, fun diorama good time. All right, who's next?
I'll do that because I'll say my name is Amanda. Amanda Tian, editor and writer here. And pronouns she, her, or they. My favorite Halloween candy, I think it's like candy I only ever eat at Halloween, which are the like Mr. Good bars, you know, the yellow ones that are sort of like a crispy rice, right? Like, I don't think I've ever seen that for sale as like a regular sized candy bar. But if I get that, I'm like, oh man.
It's like that in Crackle, right? Like,
ooh, the Crackle. Yeah, that is so good. Or even like a little Almond Joy. Like, I don't really see full Almond Joys. Yeah, any of that stuff. As a kid, I'd go crazy if I saw a Twix. It was like everything. But it's still Mr. Goodbar, I think, is where it's at for me. And the Halloween-ish game, I was getting really excited listening to you talk about Luigi's Mansion because I'm our resident, I think, scaredy cat here at the Punch Backlog. Like, big time. And very uncomfy being scared, even like preview images will freak me out. So I guess the closest thing would be What Remains of Edith Finch is this great like visual novel. It has these basically like interactive chapters where you're this person who's walking through a historical house and each room has this like different freaky mini game basically in it. And it's beautiful, but like very emotionally fraught, and it just feels, it's just so haunted, like, and it haunts me. So I would say that's probably my favorite one.
And I am Allison McDaniel, she, her. I really like Kit Kat. I know it's kind of plain, but it's something I wouldn't normally buy for myself. So if I get it for free, it's like, okay. But my favorite Halloween-ish game, I have to agree with Sam. Luigi's Mansion 3 is just, it is so perfect for this time of year. And it's just such an underrated game on Switch. But if I had to choose something else, I would say Oxenfree, which is a visual novel, like kind of spooky teenagers exploring some haunted island. Yeah, that's a really good one.
It's so good. And it replays well, too. Very spooky. Another one I was thinking, we played it in theory for the Psych Backlog Challenge a couple of years ago. We played Signalis. I still don't know how you'd say
nobody
it.
Knows.
Nobody knows, and that's what makes it proud.
It's like Balatro. It's like Balatro Signalis and Balatro.
Yeah.
A way less commercially successful Balatro, but also like a spooky, haunted lesbian robot survivor zombie game.
Yeah, I think we're not the horror crowd, the three of us.
We're
here.
Not, yeah.
I somehow am the most, like, biggest horror fan in this chat right now.
Yeah, just because and you live with Luigi's Mansion.
Because I like three Resident Evil games. That's why. Like, three, not all of them.
Exactly. And you've played Dead Space.
I do really like Dead Space.
That's a scary game.
That's a spooky game. All right. Well, let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll discuss our main topic. Welcome back. In this episode, we'll be covering nostalgia for certain games. As the quote-unquote old games guy here at the Punish Backlog, I'm constantly encouraging folks to try older games whenever they can, or at least try to learn more about the medium's past. Obviously, bonafide classics like the original Super Mario Brothers or Half-Life, they'll always find an audience. Same with like Metal Gear Solid and the old Final Fantasy games. But hundreds, even thousands of other games from yesteryear are easily forgotten. If we're being honest, the biggest reason for that is that most of them aren't that great. In fact, a lot of them are pretty bad. And I'm not even saying that they were bad now, by today's standards. They might have just been bad back then. And I'm not saying, you know, nobody ever liked them or they never had an audience, but they didn't make as much of a lasting impact as, like I said, like the big name Zelda, Mario, Metal Gear, games like that. Except for those of us, lucky enough to have played them. And again, it's not games that aged poorly necessarily or even polarizing at the time. Like, we've all played these games where we played at the time. Usually it's like a gift from your parents or your friends. Or just like, oh, this looks like a thing you want. This is a TV show you watch. This is a movie you like. This video game is based on that, so you should like that. But they're not great, but you still give them a chance, and you still have some kind of connection to them. It's still worth talking about them, even if they're not quite as popular or as important as the other classics. And I think it's worth having us all try to understand more about ourselves as gamers based on how we have these attachments to these games. So this idea was pitched to us, this podcast idea was pitched to us by Allison. So could you just give us a minute to explain why this was a topic that was important to you?
Yeah, so I believe I heard this on another podcast, probably Nintendo Voice Chat from IGN. That's definitely one of my favorite podcasts. I don't know, I have a YouTube addiction, so I watch a lot of video game content, and I swear somebody brought up like games that you just love but aren't very good. And I'm like, you know what? That's a really good conversation, because while there are a lot of great games that still hold up well to this day, that are well loved, there's a lot that just are like, wow, why did I like that?
Yeah, no, it's, and in the prep doc we have, all of us just started listing a bunch of games, and we have tons of examples of these. So before we get, you know, into more of the broader discussions, how about we all just go around and like talk about some of these games, for example? Like, Amanda, what's an example? What are some of the first ones that popped into your head?
Yeah, I was so excited by this topic because my very first game that I thought of, I was so excited to get to remember it, was The Adventures of Elmo and Grouchland for 1999 Game Boy Color release. My other favorites that I know for a fact were not good were Dragon Tales Dragon Seek for PlayStation from 2000, A Bug's Life PlayStation game, 1998. Then also, I wrote in the prep doc, was Spyro good, LOL? Like, and that's what I'm excited to discuss, because I genuinely don't know if it was just a fever dream. And then I have some more examples, but those are the ones I'll say for now.
Well, Allison, what were some of the ones that popped in your head? I know I got mad at you at one point, but be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I loved them back in the day, and I have great nostalgia playing them. But as an adult, I don't think they're very good. And a lot of them are from the Nintendo 64 era. So Donkey Kong 64 is one of them. It's just a game I can't play anymore. Wave Race 64 and Star Fox 64.
I think Star Fox 64 is the only one that I think is like impossible for you to defend. But but Donkey Kong 64, go on about that one. Because that is a wonky game. That is a wild game.
It's, yeah, no, wonky is a good word for it. I mean, the last time I hopped into it, well, for reference, I probably played it when I was like maybe 6, 7 to like very early 2000s. I just can't get past the graphics and the controls on the N64 controller anymore. I just can't figure it out. It's hard. I'm not the best gamer. I don't know what I did as a kid. I played it with my brother. That's probably why. But it just does not hold up for me anymore. But I have great nostalgia for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those games that, like, yeah, we all love that game at the time, but with the benefit of hindsight, it's a little weird.
Well, Allison, you had listed Star Fox 64 and off mic while we were preparing to record. Sam had like a full aneurysm, like right when you said that. So, like, I want to hear, as somebody who did not have an N64, I want to hear a quick pro con of why Star Fox 64 good or Star Fox 64 bad.
Bad can go first.
Well, I don't remember much of it. Also, I was very young when I played it. Anymore, I look at it and I'm like, what the hell is this? but it gives me great nostalgia for the 90s. That's why I like it and have nostalgia for it. It reminds me of a better time.
Oh, yeah.
So my thing about Star Fox 64 is, like, I'm not even, like, a huge, huge fan of the Star Fox
series. Yeah, I've literally never heard you talk about Star Fox 64 ever, but you were, like, hold on.
I have written about it.
Oh, my bad.
The thing about Star Fox 64, and I've played it again when they added it to Switch a few years ago, it's the one game from that era that if they just made it again now, it would be the same. It would look better, probably.
Yeah.
But, like, the actual mechanics of the game would be exactly the same because it's so sharply done. It's such a great, aerial shooter game that, like, it's so uncomplicated, but also there's a lot going on screen at once. And, like, I even played, like, an indie this year called Exodiac, which is based on Star Fox. And it's, like, that's a fun game, but it's still not quite as cool as Star Fox 64. but I don't want to get bogged down into Star Fox. You've gotten your pro and con right now.
Thank you. That was a good summary. What were some of the examples that you were thinking of?
So I listed a bunch of stuff. A lot of it was licensed games that I rented from Blockbuster. Like Monsters, Inc. Scream Arena is a dodgeball game for GameCube. It's a Monsters, Inc. dodgeball game that you can play in its entirety in 45 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. I think Elmon Grouchland also has a runtime of 45 minutes.
But the two big ones I wanted to highlight, one is Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance. Now, you think Baldur's Gate, that's like this prestige RPG series. Now, what if there was a spinoff that sucked? And that's... I'm exaggerating. This was a game that, like... I played. It was also a GameCube game. And I actually played it with your husband, Amanda.
No way. Awesome.
It's like a co-op dungeon crawler action game that, like, is just pretty bare bones. It's pretty nothing. Like, you just kind of whack enemies with the same button over and over again. You get some power-ups as you go along. But, like, it's pretty, like... It's a pretty average experience, but, like, it was one of the first, it was like a launch game for the GameCube. It was like one of the first games I had for it. So, like, that's where my connection goes with it. It was like, I remember, like, I would take breaks from playing, like, Melee and Rogue Squadron 2 and be like, oh, there's also this cool, like, fantasy dungeon crawler game. And then as the years went on, I played, you know, better versions of that. I went, man, what was I thinking? This game is not cool at all. The other one is a baseball game I played on Wii called The Bigs. And it's like a Major League Baseball. It's like has the real players and everything. And it's trying to be like an arcade style game. Like you could, if you hit a home run, it almost always broke the scoreboard. but also, like, you played with Wii controls, which means it was all motion, including, like, waggling the nunchuck and control and a Wii remote to run faster. You would, like, rapidly, like, put your hands up and down to see if your player could steal a base. If you wanted, you could just swing it with just the Wii remote, but I would always, like, hold it together with the nunchuck to simulate a bat, like a broken bat.
You had to make the fun with having those controllers. It just gives you so much freedom to do movements that felt silly and felt good.
But, like, it was totally unnecessary. Like, the game also was on PS2. You could just play, like, regular baseball and it would have worked just fine. But, like, I would never play that game now. Like, I would just play, like, MLB The Show. But back then, I wanted a baseball, like, a real baseball experience on the Wii. And that was the best I got. That was the closest I ever got to that.
Actually, that reminds me, I would say, too, of games like... I am incredibly fond of playing Rock Band. Like, I have these really clear memories of playing with my family in the basement, like, in the later years of high school. And, you know, it was probably the closest I could get to playing, like, a musical instrument. Like, I was just not talented at that kind of stuff. But it simulated that thing. And now, the idea of having a whole room that's kind of dedicated to these fake instruments is so ridiculous. But at the time, it was like, this is awesome. Like, this is the cool party house because we've got fake guitars that can plug into a TV.
Yeah. I mean, I still think those games are, like, good.
But I think they're good. I think that. So maybe now I'm just crossing it into nostalgia.
Well, that's the thing. Like, a lot of this is obviously, this is about nostalgia, but nostalgia doesn't mean... Sometimes it means people remember the past is better than it was, but clearly we don't here with a lot of these games.
Yeah.
and so I guess, like, why did these games in particular stick out for us? Because obviously, for the games that we grew up that we loved, those are always going to be top of mind. Like, especially when we made our list of top 50 games ever. Maybe Kay did, but, like, most people didn't have games that only gave me a list of 20 games that have come out in the last 15 years. Like, they were from the 90s and somehow games from the 80s. Like, when we were kids, like, that's all we had. So, like, I guess not just why are these games memorable to you, but why are they almost as memorable as the good games, as the Super Mario 64 or as Rock Band? Like, I guess, Allison, like, why are these games still, like, sticking your head that way?
Well, I feel like it was kind of a shock, like, remembering them so fondly and then not playing them for, like, 20 years and then going back to them as an adult and being like, oh, this is not what I remember it as. And just having a completely different opinion just kind of sticks in my head. And it's like, man, that was disappointing, because it's like, oh, I've been a champion for Donkey Kong for how many years, and then I hop into Donkey Kong 64 and I'm like, oh.
I think that's something I have this deep nostalgia for. I'm sitting in my grandparents' house in Southern California that we would get to go to, you know, once or twice a year, and it's got this kind of like dark red tile in the living room, and my grandfather is like always watching sports, but he's also always buying like new gadgets and that he doesn't need. And at one point he has bought a PlayStation 1, even though nobody really in the family plays video games. And my sister is also always getting sick. And so he pulls out this PlayStation that nobody even knew he had bought. And he goes, I bought this game for you guys to try called The Bug's Life. And he knew that the cartoon, the movie had come out recently. And he was like, I think you guys would enjoy this. And I'm just sitting there for like 2 days, just playing this game with my sister. And my sister was so good. She was always letting me be like the main player. And she would mostly watch and like encourage me. And I was such a controlling, player one. But like, that game was just such an incredible memory of playing this blue ant hopping around these leaves and, you know, bouncing around and trying to, you know, get justice for the ant people or whatever. And I looked up, trying to remember what it was called for this podcast. So I Googled it and I'm looking at the graphics. And I'm like, that's not what it looked like. Like, that's not it at all. You know, and I'm so glad I haven't had the chance to replay it, because I don't want to remember it as the game that it probably was, which is that it was probably a perfectly fine licensed title, similar, you know, Elmo and Grouch. I can't even say that Adventures of Elmo and Grouchland was a good video game. I remember even playing that as a child, like being like, this is a bad game. And I still played it because I was like, this is fun. But yeah, I think there is something to your question, Sam. I think there is maybe also being a child, you know, getting to experience these games. You know, Allison, you were saying playing those games with your brother, you know, me playing with my sister. You know, I know Sam, you know, these video game consoles, playing with your brother was big. Like, being able, it's a family experience, and also just the excitement of, like, I am a child sitting somewhere, and I'm, like, totally entranced with this form of media that is maybe kind of new to me. And it's hard to replace that kind of excitement of, like, if I do X, Y will occur, and I have impacted this content in a way. It feels, it's pretty close to magic, I think.
Wow, you really sound like Nicole Kidman talking about this game.
Oh, yeah, right, when she's, like, in the movie theater ad, is that what you're talking about? Yeah, right, every time that I don't see movies that often anymore, but when I
You always see Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, I'm like, what is she doing in here? I'm like, oh, right.
Getting checks, that's what she's doing.
She's getting those checks. Love
getting the checks, she's getting the answers.
So, the short answer is nostalgia equals joy, question mark?
Well, I was thinking about this, like, I think what's really important about these, like, childhood games, like, it's not just, like, with our families and like, that we're seeing something anew, but I don't know what it was like for either of you. You know, I grew up in a pretty privileged environment, but that doesn't mean I was getting new games all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I wasn't getting a new game every week or every month. Like, I have friends who, like, just, like, had, like, dozens of GameCube and N64 games. I'm surprised anyone has dozens of N64 games. There weren't that many good ones, but, like, like, they just always have them. And as a result, like, they got to grow up with all of, they got to experience all the good ones because they just would take a chance on anything. Whereas one of the games I listed, Buzz Lightyear of Star Command for the Game Boy Color, was just like, you know, I my parents gave me a Game Boy, I had Pokemon and Tetris, and I played those forever. And then they're like, okay, well, Sam, you like the Toy Story movies, I guess Buzz Lightyear, they didn't realize there was like a Buzz Lightyear spinoff. And they're like, well, we'll just get you this like crappy shooter, you know, this, you know, like kind of like a, what if Galaga was worse?
Yeah.
And like, I still played the whole thing. And I remember playing it specifically at my brother's track meet. Because like, I think my mom had to go somewhere and my dad wanted to be there. So I had to go with him. Because like, of all the sports you watch your siblings do, track is the worst.
That sounds awful. Yeah.
And he was a sprinter too. So it's not even like it was watching him run for a long time.
Oh my God.
And there's two memories I have to this day. One is like just waiting for him to run and just playing this entire game in its entirety. I played the whole thing in like 30 minutes, but it was also one of those games where if you die, you have to start all the way from the beginning. Oof. And the other memory is that we love giving my dad a lot of shit about this. He brought his a video camera to record it, and realized at one point he was recording the wrong sprinter and like jerked back to the other brother who had already finished his party.
That's so funny.
So like, my dad was trying to record this important memory for my brother who was the captain of the track team.
Oh no!
And he just missed it entirely.
Brutal.
So he brought this camera all the way to like Van Cortlandt Park.
And I'm sure it was really heavy because that's how like video cameras at the time were like a million pounds.
Okay, it was like 2001. It wasn't that
bad.
This was
the end of days.
But still, I just like, I will always remember this game that's also associated with my dad messing up my brother's track meet recording. But I think I don't remember the game. It's like, in that case, do I even remember the game fondly, or just remember like that experience fondly?
Yeah.
And I was playing the game while it happened.
Yeah.
Like, is that also what is that? Sounds like what it was like for you, Amanda. But like,
yeah,
Allison,
totally. Yeah.
Allison, is that, do you have like that connection, not just with your brother, but like just with any of these old games? Like, it's just like another part of your life that you remember fondly in some way.
Yeah. It just brings me back to a time where like you'd go to maybe Blockbuster on a Friday night and then run a game and just, be so excited to play it over the weekend and have no other care in the world. And that's really what nostalgia means to me.
What was, did you ever have a Blockbuster game you rented multiple times?
You know, I don't remember.
It's all a blur.
No, I don't think so.
I rented Pokemon Snap and Kirby 64 like 5 times each.
No, just buy it at that point.
With what money? I didn't have any money.
You didn't go to your job.
Yeah, I should have gotten a job when I was like 9.
Yeah, you should have.
You should have
clocking in.
I did help someone at school sell Christmas trees once, and I got paid $25.
Nice, wow, well, that's pretty big. Yeah.
Half of a video game for that.
Yeah.
So, you've touched upon this about like these are games that we just kind of want to keep the memories as they are. We don't want to necessarily go back and play these, but if these games were maybe remade or remastered in some form, like this happens all the time. And I kind of have my own conflicted feelings about a lot of these remakes, but I do often play them anyway. Like if Adventures of Elmo and Grouchland got like a new coat of paint, coat of paint.
Wait, is this a remaster or a gritty remake? Elmo and Grouchland. And it's like Batman, Arkham Asylum. At that point, I would probably.
No, maybe not like a Resident Evil style remake, but like if you like we get these games released as big collections all the time now, Street Fighter collections and Mortal Kombat and Mega Man. Like if whoever made these games said like, hey, we have a whole collection of 20 Sesame Street games. We're going to re-release them and like maybe update the UI a little bit. The graphics are going to be mostly what they are, but like at least like up-resed a little bit to fit on new screens. Like, would that interest you in replaying them? Or are you just like, no, that's it. I'm not, I watch this YouTube video and that's enough for me.
That's a great question. I think that becomes the point where I start to really remember the more quality experience of the game. Like another, there's sort of this whole genre of games that I've written a little bit on the site before, but there was a time where there were just like a lot of horse girl games. And it was where the video game industry realized like, oh, there's this whole group of people we haven't even been selling to, and they like pink and horses, like, let's make some money off of these girls, you know? And there was, it seemed like nobody, they couldn't think of any other things that could possibly be a good video game except for horse games for girls. And it was a glory age. Like, there was just so many horse games. They started to become very similar and very, like, not innovative. But there was a time where there were some really good ones, and there was a set in particular called Barbie Horse Adventures. That was probably one of the more successful ones. And that did a good job where, you know, there was a mix of, you know, Barbie's on this island and she's got to explore, and, you know, she's got a horse and she's got to train this horse and then take care of this other horse. And then there's this lost horse and we're looking for her missing friend. Like, that's the other thing too about, I think, 90s and 2000s games. And suddenly had this like really dark thing. They're like, there's a missing kid, you know, and you're like, whoa, I don't know if you should just put that in the game for children. Whereas now,
just as an aside, like, that's what 80s kids movies were.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
E.T. Yeah. And Back to the Future. And totally. All these were kind of dark.
They were
like, they
dark,
still were
exactly.
Kind of movies for kids too, but yeah,
that's true, that's so true. And so I guess they were like, let's just throw that into the big horse girl game. And so I think those, I'm not sure if they were like critically acclaimed games by any mean, but I remember thinking
it could have been like 7 out of 10 games that,
yeah,
like, but like if whoever made those games, I guess
if they remastered it, I would buy it so fast, like in a heartbeat. But like Adventures of Elmo and Grouchland, I'll pass. But like, I think there's sort of this line where maybe it's also being just like the delight of the game. Like, I don't know. There was something about those horse games that I think this is the other thing. They still haven't really made good horse games again. And if you're really wondering more about this, there's this awesome woman who's become this like horse in video game expert named Alice Rupert. And she writes this blog called The Main Quest, and it's spelled Main, M-A-N-E. And she did this great interview with on the Aftermath podcast, or it's a sub-podcast called You Are Error. And it's an episode from December 2024 called Horses. And it's a great interview that kind of, I think, encapsulates a lot of what I just want to see more from horse games and where horse games were and where they are, where they could be. But yeah, haven't really seen the comeback era of horse girl games yet.
And Allison, like you mentioned Donkey Kong 64, like we did a Punished Favorites a couple years ago on like games that we would give a remake. And that was what I thought of, was like Donkey Kong 64. If you like kept the soul of the original game and just like made it new from scratch, that would be incredible. Is that something that you would think of, or other games from that era that where you're like, if this just got a second chance, this could be something big?
Yeah, absolutely. With that, with Star Fox 64 and Wave Race 64, I definitely agree that if they had a fresh coat of paint, I would absolutely try them again. And I'd probably like them more too. And I think some of it was just going back to the controls. I'm like, I just really kind of struggled with. But when it comes to more like licensed games, like we were saying earlier, like we all have a bunch of licensed games, like especially on the like Game Boy Advance. Like I have my collection with me now.
I'm
a lot
so
of these games.
This.
I know, we're
so
getting
excited
the cartridge on the audio. Yeah, bring them up.
Yeah, you got it. You got. I need like the ASMR.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Yeah. I have The Sweet Life of Zack and Cody.
Oh,
Tip
my
Tin
God.
Paper.
What?
Evergirl, Your Way to Play.
Oh man.
Oh, that's like the, oh, we got games for girls.
Like,
there's girl in the title.
For girls. There
yes.
Are girls out there.
Lizzie McGuire 3, Homecoming Havoc.
Oh my god.
I gotta ask my wife about this. She's a huge Lizzie McGuire fan.
Oh man.
I have Bratz Rock Angels.
Bratz?
Oh man.
Okay,
yes.
So keep going. I never want this dead.
Yeah.
The Polar Express.
What?
That was kind of good.
That movie, the movie is, it's like the example of uncanny valley.
100%. That
like,
is
everyone
true.
Looks like a little bit too like much like a real person.
I know, but then you get to hear Tom Hanks think about hot chocolate.
Yeah.
A classic.
It's a good movie to watch on TBS every year.
Yes, yeah.
And then I have Catch. It's an Ubisoft game.
Catch.
Catch. C-A-T-Z.
Oh, oh Catch. Oh, with the Z, of course.
Okay, so it's like, they're, like their version of like Nintendogs, kind of like.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then this one actually was a banger. Cartoon Network Block Party and Speedway.
Oh, is that like it was like a Mario Party with Cartoon Network characters, right?
Yes, and like a Mario Kart. Honestly, yeah.
I would recommend your pick for the remaster.
Yeah, that's good stuff right there.
Yeah,
So like if obviously the Cartoon Network games, I know there's an appetite for that. I know if someone remastered all the old like I'm trying to think of all of like the big Cartoon Network shows, like Dexter's Laboratory, Powerpuff Girls, like if you could get all of those back, like a whole group of 30 to 40 year olds would buy that in a second.
So fast.
Oh. Yeah.
What about you, Sam? Which of these, or if any, would you be ready to pick back up in a remaster or remake?
Of like the games that I've listed. So like,
sure.
One set of games I didn't mention before, but so on the Super Nintendo, there was a series of Super Star Wars. So it's the original trilogy of movies that were adapted into these like sort of side scroller old Castlevania type games, like not Metroidvania, like linear, just get to the end of the level and like kill monsters, where you play as Luke or Chewbacca and all these characters, and they're like pretty average 2D action games. Like they actually run really slow sometimes. Like the frame rate is really bad, but like. Those are, of the Star Wars games I have played in my life, those are my favorite ways to play through the actual scenes from the movies. And if I could buy those right now on Switch or on Steam Deck, I would do it right now. Like, I don't think you can. I think they were like, they're like the publisher, like I guess it's LucasArts, but like, it's one of these like, people are always remastering old Star Wars games, but these are kind of the forgotten ones in a weird way. Even though they were popular, they were I think well regarded at the time. But like,
That's like, also the kind of thing too that it's just like these games become harder and harder to play or get a hold of, which then makes the want all the more intense.
Yeah, we talked about this on the Retro Games podcast a few months ago. But like, it's the biggest black. It's one. Well, it's not the biggest. It's one. It's a major black mark on the video game industry right now. That like. A lot of these companies have no regard for their own history, much less anyone else's. And so a lot of these games that we're talking about, the publishers don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Like THQ, which I guess kind of made a comeback, but like THQ just like went defunct after the 2008 recession. And THQ was making all these old Nickelodeon games and like all the SpongeBob games you played as a kid or Rugrats. Like those were all published by somebody that like went out of business, and that's why we stopped getting those games for a while.
And those were good.
Yeah, like the SpongeBob platformers on like the PS2, GameCube era, like those were pretty. I know like Battle for Bikini Bottom is like people love that game. but like even the games, my view is like even the games that aren't good deserve a chance.
Yeah,
like, deserve at least for us like you know nerds and enthusiasts to like. Have an opportunity to play again. Like the thing that makes me most excited about these like collection games that come out all the time is there's always one or two games in there. Sometimes that like only released in arcades or only released for like the Sega Saturn or something like that, a console that wasn't popular. And like now everyone has a chance to play it. Or they'll include some game that like kind of wasn't good. Like the upcoming Mortal Kombat collection, which I think comes out this week. Midway, which also doesn't exist anymore, tried to make like a series of like single player Mortal Kombat games where you just play as one character, and they tried one with Sub-Zero that was like a huge flop. It's like a famously bad game, but that's still in that collection, and that was the only way you could play that before was like if you had the PS1 disc, which like nobody has anymore. So yeah, like that's I I think talking about these games like really underscores that point of like, there's a real opportunity here. Amanda, what'd you have to say?
Yeah, I totally agree. And the games, as you were talking about, that it reminded me of were like the humongous entertainment games of like Freddy Fish and Pajama Sam, Putt-Putt. Like those were games that felt, they were interesting. They were colorful. They were charming. They asked young people to kind of think hard and engage, but also still have fun without being, you know, overly pedantic or, you know, feeling too much like school. And I remember being really sad when there were like 10, 15 years where it was really hard to get a hold of them. And then there was sort of this resurgence of republishing them. And those are the kinds of games that I think I would hope that children would get to play these games again, because they're still good games for kids. And I think we're seeing that sort of with the excitement over the, you know, backyard sports coming back. I know Zach Golanell on our site is really pumped about backyard baseball, but like those games were interesting and good for a reason. Like they actually were teaching young people a lot about like team management basically, and like data and like optimization, I guess, but in the lens of sports. So yeah, I agree with you totally that these collections are a really special opportunity to get to try them.
Yeah, and so actually you brought up a good point there that I want to kind of pivot to, is that, yeah, like a lot of these games might be, you know, licensed slop that we played as kids. Obviously, Allison's collection there had some real gems. A lot of the Disney Channel stuff, that's big. Like,
that's huge. That's so funny.
If they had a Disney Channel collection of games, like that's heat. I tell you what, but like, do you think there's like an inherent value in that? Like not even games like backyard baseball, the like games that we're loved, but like these games that aren't good, but are still part of our childhood. Like,
I don't know. Like Elmo and Gretchen.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if kids these days are getting games like that, or like maybe those games exist. Like, I know there's a Bluey game, but I know there's like, well, maybe it's different now, but I know there is a JoJo Siwa game you can buy on Switch. But like, I know there's so much competition for time and money for these games, and kids are mostly just playing like Roblox and Fortnite and Minecraft all the time. Like, these games never end. Like, I guess, you know, Allison, what do you think they're missing out from the experience that you had with all of these awesome Game Boy Advance games that weren't actually good?
Well, I do actually have a 7-year-old nephew with a Switch, and I do see what he plays. He plays a lot of Mario. He does play a nice array of things, but I think they're definitely missing out on the interactiveness of their favorite characters, if that makes sense. Like having a favorite TV show. Like, I know there's, like you said, there's a few, like there's Bluey, JoJo Siwa, Paw Patrol, but being able to step inside the world of like a favorite TV show that you loved, like, yes, I have those Disney Channel games, but do you remember like the browser games on Disney Channel's website?
Yes.
Those were awesome.
What was the, did you do this thing where like you can like create your own like room and like earn points by going on the site to get characters from all these shows and like create a little like diorama of them? Do you remember that at all?
No, I don't think so.
Well, we can move past that. We can edit that out, but go on, please, about those browser games. I know what you're talking about though. I love those games.
Yeah. No, so I mean, I used to play a ton of those, and like, it's just being able to sit behind a computer screen with like two dining room chairs next to each other with your best friend or your sibling or something. I think kids are missing out on that. Like, that was so special, and like, just dial up. Kids are missing that. Yeah. Having to connect to dial up to play like the Oregon Trail or... what else did kids play?
Toontown back in the day. Remember Toontown?
Yeah. Yes. RuneScape.
Yeah. What I love about what you're saying about like playing as your own favorite characters. Like back on the GameCube, a friend of mine says to me like, "Hey, I got this game we got to play. It's called Dragon Ball Z Budokai." And it is like, in retrospect, a thoroughly mediocre fighting game. But I was a huge Dragon Ball fan. So like, I could not wait. Like they've made since then a ton of Dragon Ball games, and most of them are pretty good, but like this one was not good, but I still couldn't wait to play it. Cause like they didn't have one on the N64. The only ones they had on the Super Nintendo were in Japanese, and I pirated one once and I did not know what was happening. But like, that matters. Like that the idea of putting yourself in those shoes, like that's really important. I do think you're getting that with Fortnite a little bit, but it's not the same. You're just putting Fortnite, these characters into Fortnite. You're not putting them in the situations that they would actually be in the shows or the movies that you like.
And it's like a costume. It's not the character. Whereas I was remembering a game called Party Time with Winnie the Pooh for PlayStation. And it was a 2001 game. And it was similar to, it's basically a Mario Party game, but with Winnie the Pooh stuff. And it was really fun, though, because I think sometimes the license slop that we've kind of talked about, I think is probably also easier for parents or guardians or like family friends to be like, this game has to be safe for kids because it's got this cartoon character on it that I recognize. So it's easy to be able to go, okay, Winnie the Pooh can't be that bad. Like when I played Kingdom Hearts for the first time, like it was incredible to be going through those movie worlds and to be interacting with those characters. Like that was absolutely insane and amazing. And I kind of doubt that anybody is doing, that young people are playing a version of that, much less Kingdom Hearts itself.
Yeah, and something I wonder is a lot of these games weren't that good, but I do think there's something that he said about you can't only play good games, or you can't only see good things. Like you have to, I think I am personally better as a writer the more games I play that I don't like. And I'm not even talking about games that I hate or think are trash, but you just got to try stuff out. And for me now, I try a lot of stuff out, but I'm also, I'm also aware of how little time I have and how little, I don't have enough money to just buy whatever, but it does matter to me when I'm looking back at, especially the games we're playing on the GameCube era, where that's when I started becoming more aware of, I started reading video game magazines and I started following the industry a little bit more. And it matters to me that I could say, here's Super Smash Bros. Melee, a classic, one of the greatest games ever made, and Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance over here. Like, you need to play one to appreciate the other bit more. And Dragon Ball Z Budokai wasn't that good, so I'm just going to play more Soul. I appreciate Soul Calibur 2 even more in terms of 3D fighting games. And I guess, do you believe, I guess the answer is probably yes, but do you believe the video gaming as a medium would be better if we embraced games like these more? Because there's always discourse about how much games should cost or how long games should be because you're trying to get the most for your money. But I'm trying to argue sometimes there's value in spending money on something that you don't even think is that good. And sometimes it's just because someone spent that money for you as a gift to give you Buzz Lightyear of Star Command on the Game Boy Color. But that there is something to that. There is something to not just creating a fun memory, but having a point of comparison. Every time I see someone say oh, Mario Kart World sucks. That game sucks. You haven't played a bad game if you think that game sucks, right? What is your going through your head when I say something like that? About whether or not this is good for the medium to have kind of some of this slop and have people embrace it in some way.
Yeah, I'm also reminded of another time where I got, $20 in a birthday card, and I begged my mom to let me go to a GameStop when we were passing through a town, and I see Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron Game Boy Advance game, and I said, I need this game, I want it so bad, and my mom said, no, I don't want you to waste your money on that, I want you to, do research and see if it's good, and to do research, to your point, Sam, but it was I'm going to have to go to a store somewhere to find, I'm in GameStop, I'm going to have to see if I can find Game Informer and see if they even covered Spirit of Silent Simon, or I'm going to have to wait till I get home, Allison, like you said, to get on dial-up and beg to use it to Google, or not even Google, AOL search this game to see if it was any good. And I eventually, I remember getting really annoyed with my mom being like, why would you stop me from buying this game? I want my horse game. And I went and got it another time, and it was pretty bad. And it was a really good lesson for me of I still enjoyed it because it was horse thing, but it did make me realize just because I'm excited about something does not necessarily mean that it's going to be good. Or if I'm going to play it, I need to accept, that maybe I'm just having fun in a different way. And I totally think, Sam, that you're bringing up a good point. And I don't know if the industry, unfortunately, can sustain that anymore. Like, there was a time where a game like Spirits Stallion of the Cimarron or Adventures of Elmo and Grouchland passed, I'm presuming, focus testing, I don't know, you know, much less player testing, and then got presumably hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, of like production and promotion. And now I just can't see a lot of these games. Like, maybe it's the licensed stuff in particular, but our current life of just so much content can sustain bad content, unfortunately. What about y'all?
Well, I'm in a Facebook group called Cozy Gamers, and sometimes the girlies in there like some of the sloppy games. Send them love. It's all good if you like that. But I mean, there's definitely a place for it because people feel comforted. Not everybody wants to play something good. Like, sometimes you're in the mood for something that's just kind of bad. Like, I read a lot too.
Yeah,
and it's like, sometimes I don't want a Stephen King book. Sometimes I want some indie author who just writes about monsters making out. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes you just don't want something perfect, and that's okay. Like, I feel like you should broaden your horizons and explore different things. And, you know, it's subjective. To some people, it might be really, really good.
Maybe. And I think you brought up a good point about, like, our, you know, the collective, our tolerance for garbage is widely accepted in basically any other medium.
Yeah.
Like, no one who watches, like, dozens of hours of Love Island is trying to tell you this is, like, good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're just telling you they watch it. And I want to reiterate, I have watched almost every, there's a new season, I haven't watched it yet, but I've watched almost every episode of Is It Cake on Netflix. And I don't even think Mikey Day is funny.
Yeah.
I don't think he's one of my least favorite SNL cast members.
What?
I just think he's annoying. He's just not my kind of humor. I'm more of a Sarah Sherman fan of terms of like the SNL type of humor. Or Tim Robinson or Kyle Mooney, like the really weird people. But my point is, I admit this is not a good show, but if I just want to put something on, I'll do
that. Yeah.
But I won't do that for video games. I won't, like, you know, I've been playing Ghost of Yote. I'm critical of that game. I think it's very good, but like, I wrote a whole article that all the dorks on the internet think means I hate the game. But it's just like I still acknowledge this is not slop. It's not like half-assed. It's not a poorly constructed product. It's just, I think it could be better. I think it could be more creative. But like, the bizarro Ghost of Yote, whatever you want to call that, like whatever, if, you know, there's a Bluey open world game that's just a cheap knockoff of what Ghost of Yote is doing. Bluey has a sword. I don't know what happens in Bluey. All I know is all the kids love it, and they just tell me that Bluey is blue.
Yeah, Bluey is awesome. I highly recommend Bluey. Bluey is like these short episodes where you think, okay, their dog's doing stuff, and then by the end, you're just crying, and you're like, this is beautiful. Like, I'll be okay again. You know what I mean? So,
sure, yeah. You know, I guess I'm glad the kids are watching that, you know.
Yeah, I hope they're growing. No, I mean, that's actually a good point, too, because I played a lot of this game, Disney Dreamlight Valley, and it was a deeply comforting game during a very traumatic period of my life. And when I first reviewed it, I thought, this is pretty good, like, farm sim cozy game. Like, it's doing a lot of the things. And the more time that I played it, I was actively like, I'm really frustrated by it. However, like, it is giving me something that I need and want, like these familiar properties. And maybe that's also why I think we're having this sort of general cultural fanaticism around remakes and remasters, is that it's like giving access to tap back into that thing that we already know and we love and that we hope to see again. And
I worry sometimes that we're too stuck in the past, but like, they just announced another remake of Halo 1's campaign. You know, I love Halo 1. I just don't need to play it again. I don't need another version of the same game. But like,
yeah.
they had another remaster of Gears of War this summer. I was like, I've played Gears of War a billion times. I don't need like a slightly better looking version of it. But like we said before, like I haven't played Super Star Wars in almost 30 years. You know, I would play that again now to just get a feel for it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting topic. I'm glad we talked a lot about this. Before we move on to our last section, I'm going to read off some of the other games that we have on this list that we didn't talk about.
Oh, yes, great
idea. I also listed Red Card 2003. It's a soccer game on PS2. I played at my friend Rick's house, where it's like a pretty solid like soccer sim. But we watched, like, the two of us just like watched a YouTube video of it a few months ago. And like, it's so low to the ground. Like, you're used to like FIFA, like having this really like bird's eye view of everything. But this is so close. Like, you cannot, there's entire parts of the field you just simply cannot see at any given time. Amanda's got some good examples here. You have Wild Wild Racing. I assume that's another horse girl game.
No, it's actually a car racing game. And we couldn't get past the opening levels where it was like, and there was this really cool man that would, you know, he'd come on and he'd tell you that he was a cool guy talking about cool car games. And he would read the levels out, which were based on different countries. And it would be like, India, Iceland, USA. And my sister and I would just toggle it back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah.
I was given to us by free by, like, again, a friend of the family that was like, kids, they like cars, you know?
We got a few more from some other folks, like Vaughn and Donovan. Like, we got Scooby-Doo Night of 100 Frights, Digimon World 3. You know, Toy Story 2 games. One of my favorites here that's listed, Mario Hoops 3-on-3. Have you guys heard of this game?
Yeah,
no.
So for those who don't know, it's a DS basketball game with Mario characters, but you control most of it with the stylus.
Oh.
Including you have to dribble on little, like coin. Like, you know, like in Mario Kart, in the old Mario Karts, it's like you're not getting a block, you're just running over a tile to get an item. It's like those things, but you have to dribble the ball on it to get coins. And like, it's not like, it's a bizarre game.
Bizarre.
You've played it, Allison, you said, right? Or you know about it?
No, I've heard of it. Yeah, I know about it.
Yeah. It's, I think that game's kind of ass, but like, it's at least ass in like a really clever way. It's like, it's trying something. It just is weird. Conker's Bad Fur Day. That's a funny one that Donovan put on here. Because that's like, people swear by that game. But
what is that?
So Allison, you're like, oh, I know what that game is.
I just looked up a picture.
Yeah, it's Conker was a character made by Rare, so the guys who made like Donkey Kong Country and Banjo Kazooie. Like, Conker's a character you could play as in Diddy Kong Racing, and they decided this like cute little squirrel character, we're just gonna make an M-rated game about him where he's like a drunk and like. There are like garden tools that hang themselves.
Oh my
and
god!
There's like so much sexualization of this like
this one bunny looks very one, very sexy.
She's very voluptuous. Yeah. That's a game. The final boss in that game is the Great Mighty Pooh.
Oh my god!
Apparently, like the actual like platform mechanics of this game are very good. Like, people swear by it that way. But like,
what
an
absurd game.
It was like one of the last N64 games too. So like, what a way to go out, you know?
Oh, man.
I have a friend who bought it recently for like $100.
Oh man.
Like, probably a good deal, to be honest. Like,
maybe.
Yeah. I think you can like play a digital version of it on Xbox, but like I keep thinking about that. I'm like, there was a period of my life where I had to play that game and I missed it.
And you missed it.
I can't be like 35 and play this game now. Yeah.
I will say a quick victory for like a nostalgia game. So I, as a young kid, I had played Hotel Dusk Room 215 on the Nintendo DS. I did not finish it. I couldn't figure it out. It was too difficult. And I guess I like couldn't look up playthroughs online or walkthroughs online. And I joined the site, you know, in 2020, and David Silbert is like, that's my favorite game of all time. I can't believe that another human being is like even talking about this game. And so I, you know, dug out my box. I know exactly where my box of video games is. I could pull up my Hotel Dusk, and I gave it another playthrough, and it was great. So sometimes returning to those games that we have nostalgia for can pay off. Not always, but they can.
Yeah, I think that's a good place to to call in this conversation. Thank you both so much. Let's just take another quick break, and then we'll go back to our outro. I always said go back to our outro.
Back to the outro.
And we're back. So before we end this episode, let's just go around and say something we're playing lately. Allison, you want to highlight anything?
I've been playing Stray on Xbox.
Oh.
Pretty solid.
Yeah.
Yeah, solid. It's fun. It's really fun being a cat. Just running around.
It is. Yeah. It's a cute cat.
It's a really cute cat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I'm playing a murder mystery bartender video game called Best Served Cold. I'll probably write something about it when I get around to it. I just like found it on the eShop. It's been delightful. And I'm playing Borderlands 4, which I feel it's just feels absurd to say that I'm still playing a Borderlands game, but I'm having fun. What about you, Sam?
Well, you bring up an interesting thing. So I'm currently in what I'd call a game rotation right now. So I'm not just like playing one game every day. I'm kind of just based on my mood, one of three. I have like what I call like the prestige adventure game. So that's Ghost of Yote.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having fun with that, but it is a game I've played before. I have my, as I like to joke, Doritos and Mountain Dew game, which is just like a gamer-ass gamer, like Borderlands 4.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying out Mortal Kombat 1, which is not the original Mortal Kombat. It's the game that came out like 2 years ago. And it's it's like a narrative reboot of series. I'm so bad at Mortal Kombat's like one of the old like classic fighter series that are still existing. Like that's the game I have the least familiarity with. But I'm having a lot of fun with that one. It's actually got like a really, the new Mortal Kombat games have like really detailed, well-written story modes.
Yeah, I remember Donovan saying something like that a couple of years ago. Yeah, that's awesome.
And like they have really good voice acting, except for the most famous person they brought in to be a voice. Megan Fox.
Oh, no.
She sounds like, the worst part is I showed a clip to my partner, Sarah, and she's like, the worst part is it sounds like she's trying.
Oh, no.
And she's just bad. Oh, that's just Reagan from New Girl, a vampire.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I recall these interviews. Yeah. Oh, man.
But then the third game I'm talking about is kind of like my podcast game, but is the game I want to talk most about, which is an indie called Ball X Pit. So it's kind of gaining some traction. It's basically a brick breaker roguelike. So you know like those brick breaker games like Arkanoid. Imagine like that mixed with like a bullet hell game.
Oh man.
Where like you're like these like the bricks of like zombies who are slowly coming at you, and you get upgrades as you go along. It's like also you can have like auto shooting, so it's just kind of like Vampire Survivors in that sense. That's a lot of fun. It's every year we have a couple games like that, these like indie roguelike games that try like a different take on like Balatro, whatever you want to call it. That was the game last year. A few years ago, it was Vampire Survivors, like Dead Cells a few years before that. This is what I think it is for this year, of like a game that is taking a familiar concept and just doing a really nice twist on it. So that's the one I want to highlight. It's a really solid game. It's like $15 too. It's super cheap. So if you just want to like, if you want a sicko game, as we talked about
Sicko game, yeah. Just be a total sicko. Is that why you brought it up? Because you were like, I got to talk about this game. I'm going to bring up sicko games.
Yeah, I need to bring up sicko games. I don't know if there's much to write about with this game, but I just wanted to give it a shout out on the podcast.
I love that.
All right. For our next episode, we'll be talking video game soundtracks. I'm sure there will be a lot of agreement and no arguments over that one. should be an awesome show, so be sure to keep an eye or ear, or 2 ears, out for it. All right, peace, y'all. Happy gaming. Thanks for listening.